Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. Sorry I missed you yesterday. I'm not entirely sure what happened. I didn't change anything on my end. If you remember, the day before, we had just that one little glitch, and I was able to click resume, and it put me back on live and so on. Well, yesterday, I got all these pop-ups that kept telling me the stream was stopped, and I kept clicking them, and three more would pop up, and it just went crazy. And I went through and recorded the rest of the lesson because in the past, whenever the streaming services have failed, my computer continues to record and then I can just upload it to YouTube and you can watch it later. Well, it stops recording as well. And I have no idea. That's never happened before. So I restarted everything. There actually was an update to my live streaming software that it actually appeared just yesterday as I started to get on. And you know, you're not supposed to update in case there's a bug or something. You don't update until you get a chance. So I didn't update right before we launched yesterday. Maybe I should have. Anyway, I restarted everything. I updated it. Hopefully today we get through without any hiccups. But I say all that because I don't know if you are, if any of you do regular teaching, but having gone through all of this yesterday, in other words, since I finished the lesson here and I taught till 10 o'clock or so, and then none of it was recorded, I'm sort of I can't remember if what I'm going to say today I said yesterday or 2 days ago or whatever. So I think if I come across a little bit distracted, I am, because it's like deja vu all over again. Anyway, let's do this. So we are looking at New Covenant theology. And in particular, these days, we are kind of tracing the big themes through the scripture, heading towards seeing the purpose and the structure of the Old Covenant. Because so much of the differences that that I have with covenant theology and dispensational theology is centered around what I think is the right and true understanding of the Old Covenant and its place in the story of Jesus and redemptive history. And if you see the covenant that God made with Israel as presented, in my opinion, it rules out both covenant theology and dispensational theology. But we're not there yet. We are looking at what is really the biggest tree in the Old Testament forest. The giant that rises above all the other characters and events, in my view. Even David, I would say. Now, how do you compare these things? But from at least the flow of the story and the root from which the rest of the tree flows, it's Abram. If you're going to, and some of you are going to pick up on my point here, if you're going to have an acorn that grows into a giant oak tree, and you're going to use the Bible to back that up, you're not going to come up with some covenant with Adam, like the covenant of grace, because it doesn't exist. But you could make a case that Abram is the acorn that grows into an oak tree with a big chunk cut out of the middle called the covenant with Israel. Anyway, don't use that metaphor. That's going to confuse people with covenant theology. But Abram is the big one. Abram is where it all starts. So think of what we've seen. God makes a promise that there's this seed coming. It's going to crush the serpent. We've had the judgment on all of the world except for Noah and his family. We've had the Tower of Babel, where God judges the world too by scattering them throughout the world and confusing their language. And then what we saw a couple days ago, we have Abram. And here's chapter 12 of Genesis. Here are the promises so far to Abram. The Lord said, "Go out from your country, your relatives, your father's household, to the land that I will show you." So Abram is in Ur of the Chaldeans, and God shows up and says, leave all the comforts of home, leave your family, leave your hometown, and go, and I'm going to show you where to go. If you do, he says, then I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great so that you will exemplify divine blessing. And then for today, it's the second part that's so important. I will bless those who bless you. Notice who he's talking to here. He's not talking to the nation of Israel. They are hundreds of years in the future. He's talking to Abram. Those who bless you, singular, Abram, I will in turn bless, God says. Those who treat you lightly, I will curse, or I must curse. You see, what God is saying here is he is attaching the blessing and cursing of others to how they regard Abram. So that all the families of the earth may receive blessing through you, Abram. Okay, so you're going to be a great nation. I'm going to make your name great. You will be the example. You'll be the paragon of divine blessing. And everyone who blesses you will be blessed. Those who regard you with contempt will be cursed. Big blessings, worldwide cosmic blessings. And how you treat Abram matters. All right, so what does Abram do? He left just as the Lord told him to do. And Lot went with him. Remember, we were introduced to Lot earlier in chapter 11. And Moses tells us here that Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. So you remember, we looked at the map, and he left Ur. The Chaldeans went up northwest to Haran, stayed there for a while, and now he left Haran down toward the land that God was going to give to him, Canaan's land, as we now call it. Abram took his wife Sarai, also we were introduced to her earlier, and his nephew Lot, and all the possessions they had accumulated, and the people they had acquired in Haran, and they left for the land of Canaan. They entered the land of Canaan. This phrase, all the possessions, also becomes important. Abram traveled through the land as far as the oak tree of Morah at Shechem. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. I always find this interesting. They traveled as far as the oak tree at Morah. Moses is articulating this as though everybody who reads this would know about this oak tree at Morah. What happened there? What's significant about that oak tree that he takes the time to write that in this account of the history of God's people? Apparently it was famous. It was known. I just find that very interesting. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your seed or your descendants, I will give this land. Okay, so this is an additional promise to what we saw at the beginning of the chapter. I'm going to give this land that you are now in, Abram, I'm going to give it to your offspring. So Abram built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. Then he moved from there to the hill country east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and worshiped the Lord. Abraham continually journeyed by stages down to the Negev, down near Egypt. There was a famine in the land, so Abram went down to Egypt to stay for a while because the famine was severe. Okay, so he's gone up, I should have pulled the map up again. Anyway, so he goes up to Haran, comes back down the western slope there to Canaan's land, to the oak tree of Mamre, and now south toward Egypt. And we're going to see here there's a famine, and Abram decides to go to Egypt during this time of famine. As he approached Egypt, he said to his wife Sarai, look, I know that you are a beautiful woman. When the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Then they will kill me, but will keep you alive. So then, tell them, you are my sister, so that it may go well for me because of you, and my life will be spared on account of you. So we know from later in the story that Sarai is, what, about 10 years younger than Abram? When they set out from Haran, how old was Abram? 75. And they've been traveling, so we don't know exactly how long this is, but Sarai is 65 plus here. What? How good looking must Sarai have been if she's in her mid to late 60s and Abram says, look, if we go down here to Egypt, Pharaoh's going to see you and your beauty, and he's going to kill me so he can add you to his harem. I suppose the alternative view, my mind does weird things sometimes. The alternative view is the Egyptian women were not not so attractive. Doesn't that boggle your mind? This what we would call an elderly woman, so attractive that Abram was fearing for his life that they're going to kill me to get to you. Anyway. So Abram says, tell them you're my sister and they will spare my life and take you. Now, here's what we know as this story goes on, right? We know that Abram is fully aware that the Pharaoh is going to take Sarah and include her in his harem and have his way with her. Peter uses this story, at least he alludes to the fact that Sarah was an obedient wife, a good submissive wife, the way that it should be a model for all wives. And there's so many questions that rise from this, right? Whether Abram is doing the right thing here or not. It's a very interesting account on every turn. And I use this, I've taught on marriage maybe probably in the top three subjects that I've taught on over the last 25 years is marriage. I've done marriage conferences. My wife and I have done those and countless numbers of counseling and so on. And I use Abram and Sarah here and Peter's use of them in 1 Peter 3 to commend Sarai and talk about Abram, what he does here. But the point of the story in Genesis is not the way I typically use it or even the way Peter used it. This is not to illustrate anything about Abram and Sarai. Okay, so it's fine to use it as an illustration, but I want to show you why Moses put this in Genesis, and it's not to talk about husband-wife relationship. Okay? When Abram entered Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful, just as Abram said. When Pharaoh's officials saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh. So Abram's wife was taken into the household of Pharaoh, and he did treat Abram well on account of her. Abram received sheep and cattle, male donkeys, male servants, female servants, female donkeys, and camels. So Pharaoh sees the beauty of Sarai, Abram's sister, and pours out vast wealth on Abram. The implication is for Sarai. But the Lord struck Pharaoh and his household with severe diseases because of Sarai, Abram's wife. So Abram gets rich, Pharaoh gets sick. So Pharaoh summoned Abram and said, what is this you've done to me? Why didn't you tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she's my sister so that I took her to be my wife? Now, here's your wife, take her and go. Pharaoh gave his men orders that Abram, so they expelled him along with all his possessions. So So we already saw that phrase, all his possessions. Now Abram has many more possessions. So Abram went up from Egypt into the Negev. He took his wife and all his possessions with him, as well as Lot. Now Abram was very wealthy in livestock, silver, and gold. So think back to what we've seen. What is the point here? Is it about Abram and Sarai? Is it even about Sarai's beauty? Is it about Abram being a husband, Sarai being an obedient wife? No, none of that. It is God fulfilling his promise. In this case, Pharaoh didn't even know he was treating Abram with contempt. But God cursed Pharaoh because of his treatment of Abram through his wife. Do you see that? That's the point. The blessing and curses of others is bound up in how they regard Abram. And now he leaves with great wealth. So he journeyed on from place to place, from the Negev as far as Bethel. He returned to the place where he had pitched his tent at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai. This was the place where he had first built the altar, and there Abram worshipped the Lord. Now Lot, who was traveling with Abram, also had flocks, herds, and tents. But the land could not support them while they were living side by side because their possessions were so great. Even Lot here is being blessed with wealth. They were not able to live alongside one another. There were quarrels between Abram's herdsmen and Lot's herdsmen. Now Canaanites and Perizzites were living in the land at that time. Abram said to Lot, "Let there be no quarreling between me and you, and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are close relatives. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself now from me. If you go to the left, then I'll go to the right. But if you go to the right, then I'll go to the left." Lot looked up and saw the whole region of the Jordan. He noticed that all of it was well watered. This was before the Lord obliterated Sodom and Gomorrah. So Moses anticipates what's coming and puts a little time reference here. It was like the garden of the Lord, like Eden. It was so lush and prosperous, like the land of Egypt all the way to Zoar. So Lot chose for himself the whole region of the Jordan and traveled toward the east. So the relatives separated from each other. Abram settled in the land of Canaan, but Lot settled among the cities of the Jordan plain and pitched his tent next to Sodom. All right, so you see what's happening. So they're prospering so much that their servants are quarreling. And Abram says, look, let's go our separate ways here. You pick whichever you want. And now you have to wonder, is Abram starting to realize God is blessing me? And he's entrusting himself to God and saying, all right, hey, Lot, you pick whatever portion of the land you want. I'm going to go to the other side and trust the Lord's going to take care of me. Well, Lot looks down and sees this most lush, well-watered area, says, I'll take that. Which, that's, I mean, I don't know if it's selfish. I guess it is. But he, it's a why. I mean, Abram put the choice before him, and he chose chose wisely, at least in that sense, right? Now, again, Moses gives us a little heads up of what's coming. Now, the people of Sodom were extremely wicked rebels against the Lord. And he carries on with the story. After Lot had departed, the Lord said to Abram, okay, this is important. So Abram chooses the land of Canaan. The Lord said to Abram, look from the place where you stand to the north, south, east, and west. I will give all the land that you see to you and your descendants forever. And I will make your descendants like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone is able to count the dust of the earth, then your descendants also can be counted. Think of that illustration the Lord uses here. If anybody is capable of counting all the pieces of dirt on the earth, pick up a handful of dirt and separate all the little pieces of dirt, can you count that high? If anybody is able to do that, then they'll also be able to count the number of descendants that you're going to have, Abraham or Abram. Get up and walk throughout the land, for I will give it to you. Okay, so think this through. God has blessed Abram with tremendous wealth. He's protected his wife in the encounter with Pharaoh. And now he says, look, I want you to look in every direction. Walk up and down this whole land that you see, Abram. Just take strolls in every direction. It's all going to belong to your children. Scoop up a handful of dirt and begin counting the grains of dirt there. And you're going to stop counting. You won't be able to count high enough to match how many children I'm going to give you. You are going to be a great nation. You are going to be the root of this family tree that is vast, numerous, prosperous, great. People are going to talk about you as the patriarch, as the stump of this gigantic family tree. Now, how old is Abram here? And how many children does he have? He's old and he has zero offspring. And yet God continues to make these promises of countless children. He's building Abram's faith by protecting him, by blessing him. But still, there is, at least if it were me, and this continual promise of offspring, there's going to be this growing tension of, but I'm getting old and I don't have any kids yet. All right, one more blessing I want to look at here. So Abram moved his tents and went to live by the oaks of Mamre in Hebron. And he built an altar there to the Lord. And then Moses gives us this battle between the four kings and five kings. There's this skirmish going on in this Sodom, Gomorrah folks and some others, and they're back and forth. And the four kings defeat the five kings. Okay, so I'm going to skip down to verse 11 here. The four victorious kings took all the possessions and food of Sodom and Gomorrah and left. So these four kings defeat the five kings, including the kingdoms of Sodom and Gomorrah. They also took Abram's nephew Lot and his possessions when they left, for Lot was living in Sodom. Okay, so these battles are going on around Abram, and he doesn't really care until they conquer Lot and capture him and his possessions. Now it's personal. Now it's affected Abram. A fugitive came and told Abram the Hebrew. Now Abram was living by the oaks of Mamre the Amorite, the brother of Eshcol and Aner. All these were allied by treaty with Abram. When Abram heard that his nephew had been taken captive, so he stayed out of it until they took his nephew. He mobilized his 318 trained men who had been born in his household. Isn't that interesting? Among all the things that Abram was doing, he was also training soldiers from his household, from his family, his clan. And he pursued the invaders as far as Dan. Then during the night, Abram divided his forces against them and defeated them. He chased them as far as Hobah, which is north of Damascus. He retrieved all the stolen property. He also brought back his nephew Lot and his possessions, as well as the women and the rest of the people. And Abram returned from defeating Chedorlaomer. The kings who were with him, the king of Sodom, went out to meet Abram in the valley of Sheva, known as the King's Valley. So Abram prospers, he conquers, he defeats all these kings that had taken his nephew. What's happening here? Why does Moses account for this? Why does he put it in the Genesis record? Because by taking Lot, these kings are treating Abram with contempt. Again, even unwittingly. And God curses them. And Abram defeats them handily and recovers all the possessions, including Lot. What happens next? Out of nowhere, Melchizedek shows up. Melchizedek, king of Salem. What Salem? Who's this Melchizedek guy? He brings out bread and wine, and Moses tells us he was a priest of the Most High God. Wait, so there's a priest of the God Most High in this town called Salem? Just out of nowhere. And he shows up, and he blesses Abram. Blessed be Abram by the Most High God, creator of heaven and earth. Worthy of praise is the Most High God who delivered your enemies into your hand. Abram gave Melchizedek a tenth of everything. This is strange. Here's this king of Salem, high priest. He blesses Abram and he says, I know what you did and I know how you did it. The Most High God prospered you. He gave you victory. You are blessed, Abram. And Abram turns and pays a tithe to him. And then Melchizedek vanishes and we have no more mention of him anywhere. Except for one quick reference in the Psalms, which the writer of Hebrews uses to give us an amazing twist in the story of Jesus. But that's not why we're here. Here, it is to show that God is blessing Abram just as he said. And Melchizedek bears witness to that. Then the king of Sodom said to Abram, give me the people and take the possessions for yourself. But Abram replied to the king of Sodom, I raise my hand to the Lord, the Most High God, creator of heaven and earth, and vow that I will take nothing belonging to you, not even a thread or a strap of a sandal. That way you can never say, it is I who made Abram rich. I will take nothing except compensation for what the young men have eaten. As for the share of the men who went with me, Aner, Eshcol, and Mamre, let them take their share. Abram is starting to get it, isn't he? He sees this. I'm not letting you take credit for my prosperity. God did this. The maker of heaven and earth, Yahweh, he did this. Not you. So I'm not taking possessions from you. Do you see? God has attached blessing and cursing to Abram and how people treat him. And that's what we're supposed to take from this. God is doing what he said he would do. All right, let me catch a couple of these here. Bruce says, my wife is 65 and very beautiful. Yeah, my wife isn't there yet, but she's also very beautiful. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Lewis. That's very kind words there. And says, God promises to bless Abraham, yet so many Christians rely on Psalm 122, stating that we are required to pray for the peace of Jerusalem so that we may prosper. Yeah, that the promises to Abram there have been hijacked by Jewish-centered thinking and dispensationalism. And I dare say that we who understand that Jesus is the seed of Abraham, we bless Abraham by worshiping his seed, the ultimate fulfillment of all the promises to Abraham, and God will bless us, not because of Jerusalem or Israel or the Old Covenant, but because of Christ, the seed of Abraham. So yeah, good point. Minimations, I wonder if Abram's story of being the head of this clan and training warriors, being given land, etc., is a picture of Christ. Yeah, now you're thinking. It's all a picture of Christ. Yeah, very good. Paul, wonder what Abraham thought about with all this favor from God, and he reflected on his life. God was building his faith in God. Yeah, all the way along. Now, he has blips. I don't know if we'll cover it, but he does the same thing again to Sarai with Abimelech. He says, oh, he's going to find you beautiful and take you. And so tell him you're my sister. And God again punishes Abimelech for it. But then later on, he displays his trust in God in a way that boggles the mind. So yeah, he is continually building that trust. Spencer says, I call my wife a daughter of Sarah all the time. Yeah, very good. Jacob, would you say this is why Abraham is blessed when he blesses God, as opposed to when Moses in Numbers 20 says, shall we make water come out, attributing some of the covenant fulfillment to himself? It certainly seems that God's anger at Moses that second time with the rock is he does take on his anger at Israel causes him to sort of forget his place, yeah, and doesn't attribute everything to God, which Abram does all along the way. So I think that's a likely scenario. Hey, our tech worked. Very good. So tomorrow's Friday. We'll do Freeform Friday and talk about some other things, and then come back Monday and continue walking through the story of Jesus. Great to have you with us today. Grace and peace to you. We'll see you tomorrow. God bless.